Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is called Metzora. It means cleansing the leper. It's Leviticus chapter 14, starting at verse 1 to chapter 15, verse 33. The Haftarah is 2 Kings chapter 7, verses 3 to 20, and the Brit Hadashah is Romans 6, verses 19 to 23. Before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech HaOlam. We thank you, Abba, for being our Creator and for giving us your gifts, the gift of the Sabbath and of your Word. I just pray that you would bless your people on this day and let whatever I say be from you and not from me. I pray in the name of Yeshua. Amen. Metzora is all about cleansing. It's cleansing the leper and, you know, people who have other issues that may not include leprosy. But first, let's look at what is the difference between cleansing and atonement. One of the things that confuses us is that we don't understand the difference between cleansing and atonement. Yes, they do kind of go hand in hand. You need one to have the other. But let's take a look at that. Well, cleansing is designed by the Lord to raise you out of defilement so that you can go before the Lord. But atonement brings deliverance and salvation. Now, the deeper meaning of this is that cleansing actually has to do with the resurrection. Monte Judah makes the point that a leper actually represents a dead person. And the cleansing of the dead person is like the resurrection, you see? And it's required, this cleansing is required for us to be in the kingdom when we come before the Lord. So that's what cleansing is. But atonement is different. It's what has to happen to you before you can go into the kingdom. You need to have come into a relationship. You need to have accepted the atonement of Yeshua. You need to accept your conversion into the kingdom. That's part of the atonement process, is, you know, converting you. And then atonement also, you know, brings you back to the standard of behavior that the Lord expects of us once we're in the kingdom, once we've been converted to being a Hebrew. And then when we mess up, we now have to have some kind of atonement that goes on. So atonement brings us deliverance and salvation. Cleansing makes us proper before the Lord so that we can approach the Lord, and it has to do with our resurrection. So now, why do I say that atonement brings deliverance or salvation? Well, it's because we recognize what the purpose of the lamb's blood on the doorpost there in Egypt was all about. It was about bringing out or delivering the firstborn of the children of Israel. In order for them to be delivered, in order for them to be saved, there had to be that atonement, that Passover, that blood that was put on the doorpost that atoned for their association with the Egyptian gods, you see? So the atonement came first, and then the deliverance, the salvation, came next. And deliverance and salvation are very much related to each other. Deliverance, or the word deliver, is used repeatedly in the King James Bible, but there are several Hebrew words that are used or translated as deliver or deliverance in the text, because again, it's the same thing as with the word sin. You know, every type of sin, the translators of the King James Bible translated all that as one word, when there's actually a lot of different words that have subtly different meanings. The same goes for deliver or deliverance. There are several words that the King James translates as deliver, when actually it would probably be better for them to find a different word than deliver. And I'll give you two examples. One is Strong's 5337, and the word is natsal, and it's a primitive root meaning to snatch away, whether in a good or bad sense. It also means to defend or to escape, you see. There's that kind of sense, and as a matter of fact, in Exodus 3:8 is where we see this word natsal being used. He says, "And I am come down to deliver them, to natsal them out of the land, out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land into a good land." So he's saying, I'm coming to snatch you out. I'm coming to deliver you. I'm coming to defend you. There's a whole array of possible meanings there that the Hebrews would have understood what that meant. But then we also have another word, which is Strong's 64:13, and again, King James says that this is deliver, but this word is pleita, and it does mean to concretely escape. It's another word for escape. And so we see this word used in Genesis 45:7, and God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Okay, so what this is talking about here in Genesis 45 is when Joseph is speaking to his brothers and saying, please don't think that you did anything that I need to forgive you for, because the Lord sent me. This was the Lord's doing. He sent me here in order to save your lives by a great deliverance. In other words, He made it possible for you to escape a situation. So you see how there, that's just two examples of the word deliver and how they are related, but they have a little bit different meaning, and you would necessarily need to understand the Hebrew in order to understand what those subtle differences are. Now, then we're going to look at the word salvation, which we know is Yeshua. And salvation, according to Strong's 34:44, means something saved, that is, something delivered. You see, so something that is delivered, that has escaped, that has been caused to be able to escape, something that is defended or is snatched away, is related to deliverance. So, atonement, blood of the Lamb on the doorpost of your heart brings about deliverance and salvation. You see, the salvation is the reality that happens after the deliverance. You go through the atonement, you are delivered, and when you get to the other side, you're saved. You see, that's why the Bible, if you go and look, the texts that mention being saved, you will see that in all but just a few instances, it's talking about a future situation. It's a future condition that you're going to be in. It's one that you're going to be in, because you're being atoned now, but you still have to be delivered, and your salvation is yet future. Your condition or your status as one who has been saved is still in the future. This is why we have to do what Peter said, which is to constantly work out our salvation with fear and trembling. We're not there yet, you see? And so, this is part of the understanding that we need to come to about what the difference is between cleansing and atonement, which leads to deliverance, so that we can gain the condition of now we're in the status of one that has been saved, or where we've got our salvation. So when you have salvation, it means you've been delivered from something because you were, you accepted the atonement. You see, I hope that I'm clearing up this meanings for you, because it's kind of important for us to understand these subtleties. For instance, salvation, deliverance, and atonement, those things relate to coming out of Egypt. They relate to being a Gentile who is converting to be a Hebrew. That's why the church calls people who have converted, they call them saved. You know, you're saved now. And what they're really saying is that you're sealed with the Holy Spirit against that day. Against what day? Well, against the day of judgment. But when we get on the other side of the judgment, we will be able to say, I am saved, or I have been saved. You see? Deliverance also has to do with being snatched away from eternal death. We get delivered from our criminal nature, you know, our propensity to continue in our crimes against the Torah and against the Lord. And we get delivered from enemies and from harmful situations. So these might seem like not so important definitions to understand, but they really are, because we have to understand that cleansing is not about our salvation. Cleansing is about how we approach the Lord, the condition in which we approach the Lord. And you can't approach the Lord unless you have been atoned for, have experienced deliverance in your soul, and are on your way to being saved. You see, you're on your way to the kingdom. That's when you get to approach the Lord. So the cleansing sacrifices listed here in this Torah portion have to do with making us clean once we are defiled. They do not have to do with our salvation. Now, I know you know this, but it really isn't possible for us out here in the diaspora, out here in exile, to be clean. We're just not able to be clean, because it requires these sacrifices for us to be cleansed. It requires this ritual that the Lord has laid down here in this Torah portion for us to be properly cleansed to come before Him. This is one of the reasons why I believe He continues to hide His face partially from us, although we know He's turning His face back. The scriptures talk about Him turning His face back to us, but He can't turn His face all the way back to us until we are cleansed and can approach Him properly. We can't be clean now, but we have to make the effort, because me making this statement about us not being able to be clean might cause some people to say, well, then why bother? Why, you know, why not just go ahead and eat the unclean animal? Why not just go ahead and, you know, not worry about trying to stay clean? Why worry about, you know, the prohibitions with the nidah and all of those things? Well, I'll tell you why. Because the Lord said that when we turn back to Him and we're making the effort, it will be then that He will give us back our heritage. You see, our heritage is these laws that we're reading about right now. It's these sacrifices. By the way, these sacrifices are gifts to us. If it wasn't for the gift of these sacrifices, you and I would have to be killed when we commit a sin. That means, you know, most of us wouldn't make it past age 2 if we got that far. So we have to understand that the Torah is a gift to us, and the sacrifices and the methods that He gives us to live in His kingdom are gifts to us. And so we have, our ancestors have deliberately and willfully, rebelliously left the Lord. And He says in the book of Deuteronomy, we're going to get to that later on in the year, He says, I'm talking to a generation. And when this generation at the end of days, this is the generation he's talking to, when they decide to turn their face back and they're starting to make the effort, now I'm paraphrasing what's going on there in Deuteronomy, but when you start to make the effort, it's the effort that he wants to see. It's the heart to do it that he wants to see. You see, that's when he will turn back his face. He will bring us back to the land. That's why we do all that we're able to do here in the exile. Despite the fact that we don't have a temple, we do everything up to what is required to have a temple for. In other words, you know, we can't do the sacrifices because we need a temple and a priesthood for that. And the temple is not in existence, but actually the priesthood is becoming a reality there in Israel now, but they are not functioning. So we do everything that we can up to the point of when we need the sacrifices. And we just have to go through our miserable existence knowing that we're still in exile and we're still in an unclean state. And oh, by the way, this is why we need the resurrection. This is why we need to be in the twinkling of an eye transformed from being what we are now. This is why I believe that that twinkling of an eye is actually the instantaneous death and resurrection of your physical body, because that resurrection is what happens to the leper when he's cleansed and we go into the kingdom cleansed, you see, and fit and ready to go before the Lord, to approach him in the way that he has told us that we need to approach him. So now, with all of that preamble, let's go to Leviticus chapter 14 and verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "This shall be the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought to the priest." You know, any priest could do this. It didn't need the high priest to do this. It just needs to be a priest. Why would the Lord say that? Why would he not say you have to come before the high priest, before, you know, ultimately before Yeshua? Well, I believe it has to do with what's going to happen when we get into the kingdom, because there will be a Levitical priesthood working there. They will be functioning in the temple. And can you imagine the millions and millions of people that will have to present themselves in the kingdom after the resurrection to make sure that now they are cleansed, because it takes a priest. Remember, once you have been unclean, and we are, now you have to go before a priest and he has to check you out, right? So you go to the priest in the kingdom and he checks you out, and then you get shut away until next Shabbat, you see, and then you get checked again and you get declared to be clean, and then you go through this process. If everybody had to go before the high priest, the millennial kingdom would have to be many times longer than 1,000 years, because there just wouldn't be enough time for millions and millions of people to come before one person. And so that's why I'm speculating here. I'm just saying this is my personal theory, but it makes sense to me, and maybe it'll make sense to you. Verse 3, "And the priest shall go forth out of the camp, and the priest shall look, and behold, if the plague of leprosy be healed in the leper, then shall the priest command to take for him that is to be cleansed 2 birds, alive and clean, and cedar wood, and scarlet, and hyssop." Now let's take a look at this. Let's take a look at that little bird. It says 2 birds. Well, that word there is Strong's 6833, and it is Zippor. Now, I'm going to show you some things about these little birds that you might not have known. First of all, they literally can be called sparrow. You know, Yeshua talked about the sparrows and how the Lord takes care of sparrows. The word Zippor has its primitive root the word safar, which means to skip about. It means also to return or depart early. Now, that's very important for us to remember, because who are the little birds? Well, one of them is us, and one of them is Yeshua. Now, one returns, and the other departs early. Yeshua returns, we depart early. We depart. Why early? Because he said he was going to shorten the days. Do you see how these two little birds become so very important to us? And there's even more to this. The wife of Moses, her name was Zipporah. Now, her name literally means bird. Her name is Zippor, you know, which is the Zippor, which means the little bird or the sparrow with the ah on the end. So we have Zipporah, Zipporah. She is the one that had the problem understanding the covenant. Oh, by the way, one of those little birds understands the covenant and one of those little birds doesn't. One of those little birds represents Yeshua, and the other little bird represents us. So who understands the covenant, and who doesn't understand the covenant? Well, it's Yeshua who understands the covenant, and we who do not understand the covenant. Now, yes, we have an inkling about the covenant, but I guarantee you that we don't really understand the covenant, even though we think we're coming into some understanding about it. I think that way back there with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I think they had questions about the covenant. The children of Israel certainly had questions about the covenant. They didn't understand the covenant, because if they had truly understood the covenant, would they have done a lot of the things that they did? Probably not, although we must also take into account there was flesh involved there, you know, that they didn't circumcise their hearts and things like that. But I think also one of the factors in their misbehavior toward the Lord was that they really didn't understand the covenant. And I think that our understanding of the covenant is going to come to fruition when we get into the kingdom. Now I'm going to show you how that Yeshua is one of the birds and we are the other bird. Let's go to verse 5. It says, "And the priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in an earthen vessel over running water. As for the living bird, he shall take it and the cedar wood and the scarlet and the hyssop and shall dip them and the living bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the running water." Oh my. Did Yeshua live in an earthen vessel? Yes. Was he killed in his earthen vessel? Yes. Did he himself die? No. He was resurrected because he was living in what we live in, an earthen shell. Now, his earthen shell died and was resurrected incorruptible. Our earthen shell is going to be die and be resurrected incorruptible as well. But you will not be able to say of your earthen shell later on that it's the same kind of earthen shell that you have now, because these earthen vessels can become corrupt. In fact, in this Torah portion, we learn about earthen vessels becoming corrupt in chapter 15. So he lived in an earthen vessel, and he was killed like the bird in an earthen vessel. Do you see that? And this living bird, the one that wants to live, the priest takes this bird and dips it in the blood of the bird that has been killed. Friends, that's us. That's us. And so this is how we get the confusion that the blood and the cleansing and the blood and the atonement are all the same thing, you see, because we do need the blood for cleansing, but there's a different blood that is for atonement. And so now we see how these birds represent Yeshua, and one of them represents us. Now, hyssop, let's go to the other parts of this sacrifice. The hyssop has a cleansing effect. In fact, hyssop is Mediterranean oregano. If you go to the health food store, you can buy oil of oregano, and what you're buying is actually hyssop. It is one of the most potent antimicrobials, antibiotics, antibacterials on the earth. It has the ability to cleanse, you see. And the cedar wood represents incorruption, which is why I say this cleansing has to do with the resurrection, because what do we become upon the resurrection? We become incorruptible in our flesh, don't we? Okay, our flesh is changed from corruptible to incorruptible, as what Paul explains to us. And the running water is his spirit washing away our contamination. It washes away that which has made us unclean. And of course, the scarlet is telling us that it is Yeshua's blood that gives us life. See, when you go through this process of being resurrected, now you have eternal life. But you only have eternal life because it's Yeshua's blood that you're dipped in, you see? So now you're cleansed by the blood. Oh, and by the way, his blood also does serve to atone for us. It's kind of hard to explain the subtle but most important differences between cleansing and atonement, but it is important for us to understand it so that we don't confuse that being unclean is sinful. It is not sinful to be unclean. It's just a condition that keeps you from the Lord. So you have to be cleansed of this condition that keeps you from the Lord, you see. Atonement is how you get to the Lord in the first place. You see what I'm saying? You get into relationship with the Lord in the first place through atonement. But then when you get unclean, now you need water and blood to cleanse you. I hope that I'm explaining this in a way that is possible for you to understand, and that I'm not confusing you. If you're confused, you know, you can call me, you can email me, you can even get me on Skype, you know. I don't want there to be any confusion about this, because we need the blood for atonement, we need the blood for cleansing, but they serve two different purposes. The cleansing serves a different purpose than the atonement. I hope that that finally settles the definition that I'm trying to explain to you. Okay, verse 7. And he shall sprinkle upon him that is to be cleansed from the leprosy 7 times, and shall pronounce him clean, and shall let the living bird loose into the open field. See, the field represents the world. He lets us loose. We get dipped in his blood, and he lets us loose to go out into the field. And now here comes something. In verse 8, and he that is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes and shave off all his hair and wash himself in water, that he may be cleaned. You see, what happened to the bird now happens to him. Except the bird, we don't pluck the feathers off the bird, but you know, the bird gets washed in the water, right? It says here, and the living bird he shall take, and the one that was killed, and dip them and the living bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the running water. So there's running water associated with that little bird. You see, the one that's us. But this guy, now he's going to do in his actual physical body, now he's going to shave off all his hair, wash himself in water, you know, like the bird, that he may be clean. Okay, so now he's going to be clean, and it says, he shall tarry abroad out of his tent 7 days. Now, that's speaking about the exile, friends. Mankind has been abroad and out of his tent 7 days. You know, it's getting pretty close to now us being out of the Garden of Eden for 7 prophetic days, right? 7,000 years. You see what I'm saying? And it shall be on the 7th day That's the millennium that we are waiting for, because I'm going to show you something here. That he shall shave all his hair off his head, and his beard and his eyebrows, even all his hair he shall shave off, and he shall wash his clothes. Also he shall wash his flesh in water, and he shall be clean. What is this shaving thing about? It's about rebirth. It's about making our body to be like that of a baby's body. Babies' bodies, I know you're going to say, well, babies have hair on them. Yes, they do. But if you look at a baby's body, you don't see that coarse hair that we see on grown people. The shaving is meant to bring us back into being like a newborn, you see. And prophetically, when we when we get into the kingdom, we're going to be like babies, you know, after our resurrection. You see, this is how that all kind of plays into that. Now, the rest of chapter 14 is, of course, continuing with the cleansing of the lepers. And chapter 15 talks to us of, you know, cleansing us of those other ways that we become contaminated. And what other ways are there that we become contaminated? Well, of course, we talked in the last two Torah portions, actually, about death and then childbirth and leprosy. But we've also got here in this Torah portion, discharges, intercourse, and menstruation. See, previously in the last Torah portion, we talked about childbirth and death as defilements to us. And why are they defilements to us? Well, it's because they are conditions that only humans experience. The Lord does not experience these. You know, he doesn't die. He doesn't procreate. He doesn't get infections or become contaminated or diseased in any way. And he doesn't consume unclean animals on his altar, you see. So when these things come into our lives, we become in a condition that doesn't mirror the Lord. And what are we supposed to be? We're supposed to be the image of Yeshua. We're supposed to be the image of the Lord. And so we need to be cleansed from these conditions, because they are conditions that just happen to us as humans. They are not sin. In the, you know, like the King James Bible and other Bible translations call them sin. You see, sometimes these teachings that I give, I know, are for people who are beginning to understand these subtle but important differences. And I kind of understand what Paul was up against, because if I say anything like earlier when I said, you know, we can't possibly be clean out here in the diaspora, then there's going to be some people who are going to run around saying, Kimberly Rogers said don't try to be clean. You know, don't try to do these things, because it ain't going to do any good anyway. That's not what I said. Poor Paul and maybe poor Kimberly. I don't know. But anyway, chapter 15 has to do with additional things that occur to us, because we have to procreate, do we not? And we have to die, do we not? The Lord said that is given to man wants to die. It's a necessity. But it doesn't make us sinful just because those things happen to us. And so that's a very important distinction when it comes to sin and cleansing, just as, you know, the difference between atonement and cleansing. You see what I'm saying there? So anyway, chapter 15 has to do with those defilements and how we get out of those defilements, the things that we need to do that brings us back into a state or into a condition in which it is acceptable for us to approach the Lord in his temple or his tabernacle. So I hope that this Torah portion has been a blessing to you. Shabbat Shalom.